Ramsey TV.
Yeah, that's true. I did say that the internet service during the kingdom would be better, faster service, closer to Jerusalem than in the outer darkness on the four corners of the earth. No, I didn't explain it yesterday because I wasn't clear about it, but I thought about it later. Well, it's because the modem is in Jerusalem. That's why. The modem is in Jerusalem. Well, you know what? The modem is, the closer you are to the modem, the better the service. And the modem in Jerusalem is like the size of the Tower of Babel. So anything within like 1,000, 2,000 miles of Jerusalem, you're going to get fast internet. After that, you're on your own. It's spotty. Just like at a hotel. If you're down the hall, way down from wherever the modem is in the lobby, you're lucky to get internet at all. Martin Zender from the edge of the bottom of the Floridian Peninsula. We're going to talk about fear today and Paul's use of fear in Romans 11. Just the fact that he tells the Romans to fear in chapter 11 tells you it can't be about individual salvation, because fear has nothing to do with Paul's gospel. That's great news for you, and you're going to love this show. So fear has to do with something else. Oh my God. Tomorrow I'm going to get into detail about how that fear is going to play out, but today I'm going to describe it. I'm going to read the passage in Paul and describe it. But first, every once in a while, I like to read, oh, by the way, if you're wondering what that is up there, that's a helium balloon. If I turned it around, it would say, happy birthday. Charles had that attached to his little collar when I went over to the house on my birthday. So that was Charles' gift to me. It's a helium balloon. It just floats around the cottage. Every time I get up in the morning, it's at a different place. It wanders around the ceiling during the night. So every once in a while, I like to share a letter with you. I mean, I get lots of letters. I could share letters with you every day. But every once in a while, a letter comes in that really hits me, and I want to share it with you because, as members of the body of Christ, you need to know that there are other believers out there. Not many, but there are some. And this is a person who watches this show on the sly, flies under the radar. We don't know about him, but he decided to write me. And his letter was so amazing, he shared part of his testimony with me. This person lives south of the equator. That's all I'll say. I told him I would protect his identity and his location. I asked him for permission to share his story. And he said, please, if you think it'll help the saints, if I think it'll help the saints, are you kidding? These people are dying of loneliness. They would love to know that you're out there, that you're down there. And they also like to know that this show, MZTV, is reaching people because you, my viewers, support this show. And as I say, you want to know that you've bet on the right horse and you've supported this work, you've supported this outreach. And I have to tell you, when it bears fruit, you need to know. You need to know that the project, this outreach that you're supporting, is bearing fruit. People are taking notice. Now listen to this. This is fantastic. I can't wait to read this to you. And here it goes. Hi. It's a great beginning if you ever write me a letter. Hi. I'm another quiet viewer that watches your content. See? Somebody flying under the radar. I just found out how to send you emails. I'm about 21 years old now, but I just really want to express my gratitude for what you do. It really did save my life. Folks, I get emotional about this kind of thing. I mean, this makes everything worth it. Everything I've suffered, every horrible thing Satan has thrown at this work and at me personally over the years is worth it when somebody tells you something like this. I'm 21 years old now, but I just want to express my gratitude for what you do. It really did save my life. To give background, I grew up as a devout Seventh-day Adventist, riddled with panic from day one. just from the uncertainty of salvation they proposed through that theology and the inconsistencies. Seventh-day Adventists worship on a Saturday and believe in annihilation over eternal torment, as you probably already know. But anyways, it got to a point to me where I couldn't care less whether I lived or died. To me, I believed that I'd found peace one way or another, but I started to have suicidal thoughts. Why? Well, Martin, even as I send this message to you, I begin to tear up. I could not accept such a cruel fate, which they had no control over. That is the fate of annihilation. Far less cruel than eternal torment, but cruel nonetheless. I was filled with great grief with the idea that their life would end without hope, without a future, for them just to be revived again so that they could be killed by a vengeful God. He speaks of the vengeful God. This is me. He speaks here of the vengeful God of the Seventh-day Adventist, quote, faith, unquote, that raises people at the great white throne in order to judge them, only to then annihilate them. One has to ask, what is the purpose of judging them if only to annihilate them? It brought this young man to despair. It brought him to thoughts of suicide. He reveled in his own salvation, he says here. But even in relaying this thought to me, he begins to cry because he remembers how he felt when he realized that he was saved, but that all these other people, through no fault of their own, were going to be raised and judged only to be snuffed out. Only to be snuffed out by an evil God. He calls him a vengeful God. I had great grief with the idea that their life would end without hope, without a future, for them just to be revived again so they could be killed by a vengeful God. I hated God. I really did. Why did I have to be born in a belief system like that, that I heard taught every Saturday? It was a direct advantage I had. That advantage would lead to me gaining life, and someone else who didn't believe that theology would die. That's what I believed at the time when I believed that theology to be the truth. I would cry night after night, filled with bitterness. I could not live with such a reality. And ladies and gentlemen, this is me, but these beliefs in Christianity become your reality. To those who are honest, like this young man, to those who take what is said with an acceptance that tells one that it's true, they actually believe it. As you know, many Christians just give these doctrines lip service, and they're so calloused. They believe in eternal torment, Christians do, but they're so calloused that they don't show any emotion. But this man, with his conscience still intact, unlike Christians, most Christians who have had their consciences, the Concordant Version says, cauterized or burned off, this guy still had a conscience. And it bothered him that he had the faith, according to his certain specific denomination, to believe, but these other people were going to be snuffed out by a vengeful God. I could not live with such a reality, and he thought it was reality at the time. I thought better to die. Coming around age 19, I started to see your videos. The first one I saw was, quote, How I Came to Believe the Salvation of All. That was a video I made last year that, by the grace of God, this young man came across. I will link that video to you down here. It's a long one. It's a conversational video. I didn't realize the impact it would have at the time. I thought it was a bad show when I did it, and I thought, I don't know what this is going to do. It ends up being a big views, lots of views. It got a life of its own. It was organic. It went out there. This kid saw it. It's amazing. I'm going to link it down here to you, How I Came to Believe in the Salvation of All. He goes on, I felt compelled to watch, and I had not felt such joy ever at all before in my life, that there was hope for all, that no one ever fell through the cracks, that God really did love everyone unconditionally, that Jesus really did save the world. From there, I felt so at peace. It was a battle unlearning the theology I grew up with, but eventually I was able to accept the many different paths a human will take, including ones with bitter ends, knowing that it wasn't the end, that God never gives up on humanity. I loved how you said in your book, The First Idiot in Heaven, how God is in a tug of war, but he pulls so hard that everyone comes to his side. I forgot this line in the book. I haven't read my own book in 8 years. This young man got a hold of it. And yes, God is in a tug of war, but he pulls so hard. God pulls harder than Satan. God pulls harder than Adam. And he ends up pulling everyone to his side. He pulls so hard that everyone comes to his side. The immense joy I will feel that day. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine it? People who fucking died with no hope. I'm quoting him. People who fucking died with no hope. Being given it all. Well, that is coming to life with God for eternity. Like you said in your book, the Pharaoh of Egypt will be one of the ones to sing the greatest of praises. To see the light come back to people's eyes who are lost, can you imagine it? I can't, but I look forward to that day. That if God can save everyone, then he can save me too. What a sweet spirit. What a humble and contrite spirit this young man has. If God can save everyone, he can save me too. Thank you for your message, Martin. To this day, it keeps me alive. I thank God I found your videos. My deepest regards. The young man signs his name. What a great testimony. I love reading these things to you because you need to know that you're not alone. These people are out there. People have struggled. They've come through the Orthodox teaching just as you have and as I have. And they found light one way or the other. God brought them through. God had his hand on them their entire lives. God had his hand on this young man for his entire life. And he brought him to some ragtag guy in his backyard making a video about how he came to faith and changes somebody's life. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Thank you for your message, Martin. To this day, it keeps me alive. I thank God I found your videos. And I, Martin Zender, thank God for you, viewers, who helped me to continue to do this work. That's all I will say about that. Along that line, I publish on Saturdays a classic video. And this last Saturday, those of you who don't subscribe to my website newsletter thing, I published a video Saturday from the old days called Jerry Beauchemin and the Body of Christ. As you know, I'm not afraid to name names. I'm not afraid to name the names of people who compromise the gospel of grace, who mix Paul's gospel with other elements, foreign elements, such as law, or who lower the bar of belief, of truth, so that they can get more people in. I watched this video the other day, and I liked it so much I put it on the Saturday Classics. It's called Jerry Beauchemin and the Body of Christ. I have many new viewers, so I mention this. It is linked below, along with the video mentioned by this young man from south of the equator. It's MZTV 368, Jerry Beauchemin and the Body of Christ. I don't know what number the video is where I just tell my tale, really. I tell my testimony of how I came to believe in the salvation of all. If you're interested in that, go to it. Go find it. Now, I want to talk about fear and the lack of it that we have. And Paul's use of it in Romans 11, which is very foreign to his gospel. So it should be notifying people that something's up here. There's something screwy going on if Paul's mentioning fear. I don't have much time left now because I spent so much time on my on this letter, but I'm glad I did. Let me just introduce the overriding thought here, and then I'll flesh it out tomorrow. This is from my newsletter called The Nations to Be Hewn from the Olive Tree. This is that famous passage in Romans chapter 11 that is so misinterpreted, taught to believe that we as believers should fear. We should be worried all the time about our salvation. This is one of the verses that is misused to trick people into thinking that salvation is not once saved, always saved. No, you can be hewn out of the tree. And they interpret that as meaning you can be hewn out of Christ. How do you be hewn out of Christ? By doing things that belong to unbelief, by being a bad person, by doing bad things. Whatever your denomination says is a sin, you do that, you could be cut out of the olive tree. Beware, fear, because if you misbehave, you will be doomed forever. Fortunately, that's not true. Fortunately, we are intelligent interpreters of the word. We can read what Paul says, and we can read what he says earlier in Romans. Here's the verse that throws people off. Romans 11, 19 through 21. You will be declaring then, boughs are broken out that I may be grafted in. Ideally, Paul says, by unbelief are they broken out, yet you stand in faith. Which Paul's being very, I'm going to explain this to you. Paul's being very generous there when he says the nations stand in faith. Maybe in Paul's day, they did stand in faith. Maybe there was some pure little innocent faith that some of the nations had. Yeah, there's a God. He must be a good God. But today, there is hardly any faith. As Jesus Christ said, when the Son of Man returns, will he find faith in the earth? The question, the answer to that question is, except for the remnant, no. Except for the body of Christ, no. There was virtually no faith on this earth. There is self-confidence, there is self-righteousness, there's lots of religion and lots of philosophy and lots of politics, lots of posturing, lots of people preening and posing, passing themselves off as people of faith. Even our national motto here in the United States is "In God We Trust." It is complete BS. Because we don't trust in God. We trust in that piece of paper that phrase is printed on. That's what we trust in here in the United States. The almighty dollar. Build their barns larger and larger to try to save up more money. To make their lives more comfortable. It's a dodgy prospect. Paul says the love of money is the root of all evils. And you will snare yourself with many pains, many trials when you try to make more of it. In order to pad your existence, say to retire early, or to just work your nuts off so that you can reach some nirvana. I made a video about this years ago. It's that old American thing of work, 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 build up a nest egg so you can retire, and then when you finally retire, you're so stressed out, you die, and your money goes to other people. That's what Solomon said would happen. A man gains, and he gives his money to his descendants, and he dies without being able to enjoy it. Oh, that's nice. That's another one of the evils done under the sun. That's a problem when you love money. Anyway, by unbelief are they broken out, yet you stand in faith. That's Paul's being very generous there. Maybe there was some back then, but now it's scant. Be not haughty, but fear. Here it is, fear, fear. For if God spares not the natural bowels, neither will he be sparing you. Neither will he be sparing you. This is the verse that trips everybody up. Tomorrow, I'm going to have to do it tomorrow. I was going to do it today, but I spent so much time in that luxurious letter that you needed to hear. So tomorrow, I'm going to talk about fear. I'm going to talk about how Christian uses fear to manipulate people and how they mishandle this verse to manipulate people, because fear works very well to keep people in your power, to keep people coming to you for comfort. Help us, deliver us from the fear, deliver us from the possibility of losing our salvation. Only Christ can do that. No, but these organizations in Christianity set themselves up as the ones able to deliver you from fear. The gospel of Paul has nothing to do with fear. What happened to these people who read Romans 11? Didn't they come through Romans 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8? Didn't they read what was written there? That there's no fear, that we're saved by grace? But they come to Romans 11 and they find this verse and they go, "Ooh, we have to fear, we have to." Why do they love this verse so much at the expense of the verses concerning grace in the earlier chapters of Romans? I will answer this question and others that I haven't even asked yet tomorrow.